listening to On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library.
Welcome back to another episode of On the Same Page. We're your hosts. I'm Abby.
And I'm Katie. We're librarians at the Central Library.
On this episode, we hear a recording of a panel on women's health and empowerment that took place at the Northside Library in August.
But before we get to that, we've got book chat.
All right, book chat. Katie, what did you read?
Right, so I often read a lot of family sagas. I feel like that's a common book theme. And so sometimes it can get like really formulaic and you can get tired of the melodrama. So I was excited when I found a book called The Travelers by Regina King, because it kind of subverts the formula of the family saga in that it's, well, I'll talk about the plot first, or what plot there is. So it's like there's two interconnected families, American families. One is white and one is black. Okay. And it takes place roughly between like, the 1950s up to about 2010. Okay. And so it's a really funny, dark humor kind of book, and it tackles a lot of big subjects, like there's race and gender, sexuality. You've got the AIDS epidemic, Vietnam War. Sure. You think of it. It's in this book. And what's really cool is that it's a non-linear storyline. So
I love those.
Jumps around. Yeah, it's not going to be for everyone, this book, right. Because it does move from, you know, one story, one family to another, you know, like 20 years ahead, and then like a minor character is now a major character in the next story. But for me, I loved it. I think King is also a playwright. So if you think of each story, kind of as an act or like a vignette, together, they all kind of make a really cool story. So I loved it.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. I am intrigued. I am not usually one to read family sagas, but the things that always draw me in is when I know it's a non-linear timeline, and I'm like, okay, this I can do. I read something completely different. I read Circe by Madeline Miller. This came out last year and has been very popular. I got the audiobook on Libby, so we do have that if you are an audiobook listener. But we also, I know, have lots of print copies. And so this is just, it was, to me, a very accessible way to engage with Greek mythology. So Circe is the daughter of the Titan Helios, who is the sun god in Greek mythology, and the daughter of a nymph. So she's not a full god, she's more of a witch. She is a witch. She's probably best known today because she's in the Odyssey. At one point, Odysseus gets kind of stranded on her island and she turns all of his men into pigs. And that's part of this story, but it's really just like the story of her life, which I really like the idea of telling the full story of characters who are sort of minor in, like, more canon stories, right? So I loved it. I thought it was really interesting and just, yeah, very accessible in a way that I never expect anything that has to do with Greek mythology to be.
Good. That's been on my to-read list for a long time, so... And yeah, I don't know much about Greek mythology, so I've been kind of putting off, but
it was a good, like, sort of crash course. Yeah, because it even deals with, like, the struggle between the Titans and, like, their children, like, Zeus's, gods of, like, Zeus's level, or Zeus and his pantheon. Is the whole thing a pantheon?
Cronies, yeah.
Zeus and his cronies, yeah. So the children of Titans who kind of knock them out of power. But yeah, it's very interesting.
Very cool. Great. So I have one more book I want to talk about because it's been one I put down a couple weeks ago and haven't stopped thinking about. And it's a nonfiction one, which is good. So it's called Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in Silicon Valley Startup. It's by a Washington Post journalist, John Carreyrou. And this has to do with Elizabeth Holmes and her company Theranos.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's about the rise and fall of Elizabeth Holmes. And so a little background for some people who may not be familiar, because I had kind of forgotten about it until I picked this book up. But she is this 19-year-old college dropout, and she had this vision where she was going to create this machine that would make blood testing significantly better. Like, it was going to change the industry. And so you could take what just one drop of blood, and you measure all these, like, more tests than any other machine could before, that results would come faster. And it would essentially be, she thought it was like the iPhone of medical devices. And so she kind of becomes the next Steve Jobs in the world, which is really interesting because she kind of, this was a label that was put on her, but she also embodied it too. Like, right. She had a uniform. She only wore like a black turtleneck, how Steve Jobs only wore one outfit. Yep. They said she even held her meetings, like creative team meetings, on one day of the week, because that's what Steve Jobs would meet with his creative team. And so, and then eventually, like, you know, word got around. She had, you know, her company became worth billions. She had venture capitalists at her feet. But of course, the only problem was it didn't work. This was all a fraud. Yeah. So it was fascinating to see this journalist. He wrote an article for the Post and exposed Holmes and her company and brought them down. But it's fascinating, also kind of aggravating, because he interviews, you know, former employees, and there's all these red flags that came up, you know, that, you know, people started to see, you know, something not right is going on here, and tried to say something or were too afraid to say something. And so it was just a crazy look at ambition, especially in the Silicon Valley world, but also the lengths of what one person will go to create her own personal legacy, which is really what, as this author puts it, is what she was after. It wasn't so much saving lives, it was becoming the next, you know, idol in tech world.
She's getting a very different lasting legacy.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure.
That's great. Oh, good. I'm glad to hear about that, because that is a very interesting kind of current story. Next, we hear a recording of an event that took place at the Northside Library in August. Representatives from the Women's Initiative, UVA's Women's Center, Santara Martha Jefferson, the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, and the Shelter for Help in Emergency discussed their organization's services and patient and pertinent current issues concerning women's health and empowerment.
Before we get started, I want to take a moment to thank all of our participants who've taken the time to be with us this evening. Joanna Ajax from the Women's Initiative, Leanne Carver and Director Abby Palko from the Maxine Platzer Lynn Women's Center at UVA, Jackie Martin from Santara Martha Jefferson, Lexi Groves from SARA, the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, and Robin Jackson from the Shelter for Help in Emergency. Briefly, to cover kind of the agenda for the evening, each representative is going to have a chance to talk about their organization. The second half of the program, we're going to open up to questions and hopefully a discussion. So once again, thank you for coming out this evening. And I think we agreed to start with Jackie with your PowerPoint.
Is that all right? Sure. Okay.
Well, did we agree on that, or did I just?
No, that's fine.
All right, you're all set.
Okay. Thank you. So, hello. Thank you for having me here. I'm Jackie Martin. I work in community benefit at Santara Martha Jefferson. And I'm not a clinician. I'm a community person. So my job at the hospital is to work on our community health needs assessment. We're required as a nonprofit hospital to do an assessment every 3 years. And then the IRS also requires that as a hospital, we come up with a plan on how we're going to address the priorities that have come out of the assessment. So I'm going to share with you the 2016 assessment identified the four priorities you see here. So promote healthy eating and active living, addressing mental health and substance use, improving health disparities and access to care, and fostering a healthy and connected community. So I'm really excited because the 2019 assessment is not identifying new priorities for us, but it's looking at the priorities through a health equity lens. So I'm going to tie this to women's health in a little bit. So first, though, I want to share with you a paraphrase definition of health equity. So I'll give you a second to look at that. Okay. So what we know about health and what affects health. So this surprises people sometimes. because we tend to focus on clinical care and health behaviors as the things that most affect health. Well, turns out they're only 50% of what impacts your health. And so while it is very important that people don't smoke and that they're eating healthy foods, that health behavior bucket is only 30% of what goes into your health. The other 50% of what affects your health, 40% of that is your socioeconomic factors. So we're talking about there your job, your education, all of those things play into socioeconomic factors, and then your physical environment. So if you live in a place that doesn't have sidewalks, you're not as likely as those of us who have sidewalks to get out and take a walk. So your physical environment and how it's set up is very important to your health. Okay. So I said that we're focusing on health equity in the assessment this time around. And so what is equity? So there are lots of versions of this, but this is one of my favorites. So you see in, at the top, what equality is everybody having the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work for several of the people there. You know, if you're in a wheelchair, you can't ride a regular bike. You need one that's adapted to your needs. So equity is really about giving people what they need. And I say giving, but it's really not giving people anything. It's about breaking down the barriers so that everybody has access to the things that they need. So during the assessment that I should say is led by our health department, and I participate as a core group member representing Sentara Martha Jefferson. Other core group members are UVA Health System, UVA Department of Public Health Sciences, and I said the health department leads it. So we have, as we've gone around working on the assessment this time around, used a documentary called Unnatural Causes that I think is dated like 2007, but it really is helpful in making the case about what we're talking about when we're talking about equity. So I'm going to play for you the trailer. There are like 30 clips you can find on YouTube. And then how all of this applies to women's health. Well, it does anyway, but Kim Anderson's story, I think, will maybe really make it relevant to what I'm talking about. So let me play. The clip is about 4 minutes. What I am excited about in public health is that we are now looking at the social determinants of health. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer, right, that jobs and education and things like racism all play a part as far as your health. So to be looking at, as a healthcare system, what are our responsibilities to address the social determinants of health is what we're talking about now. So I do want to share that all is not lost. There are lots of things that we can do. So I wanted to bring back the diagram of what affects health as we talk about what can we do. So there are lots of best practices out there. You know, people have tried things for diabetes prevention and management, and we have research that says certain things work better. But one thing we're not so good at doing, I think, and I'll speak for Sentara Martha Jefferson Hospital, is getting community input when we put programs in place. And so this time, as we've worked on the assessment, focusing on through a health equity lens, we have contributed some community input through a diabetes steering committee made up of people of color to explore the best practices in diabetes prevention and management and say to us, this works well, we don't think this works well. When I walk into the YMCA, but you could walk in any place. Some of our participants in that group were Spanish speakers, so we always had an interpreter there. How does it feel to walk into a place and ask about diabetes management and need someone to interpret for you? Are they going to be ready for you? Are they going to call someone in? How are you going to be made to feel while you're there? We've also done some photo voice projects. Anybody heard of photo voice? Photo voice is really cool qualitative research method that uses photography to give people who are not typically in power a voice. And so we've had we've done like 6 photo voice projects. One, I haven't participated in all of them, but we did one for the Louisa Reentry Council. So, and I got to do the focus group for that event. So people take pictures and we ask them to take pictures of community assets that we could build on to improve health equity. And so they took the pictures and then they came back together to talk about them. So in the focus group, there was someone in the group who'd been incarcerated for 34 years. I don't know what he did, but he'd been incarcerated for that amount of time. Somebody took a chance on him when he got out of prison, gave him a job, and he quickly moved up to a supervisory role. And a picture he took of an asset was a trailer that he'd been able to buy. So, and he talked about how housing is such an asset. And so that was one thing featured in the photo voice projects. And then a really big thing is to consider equity in project planning and development. And there are lots of tools out there that give you some things to consider as you're talking about projects and making sure they are including people that who may not be included typically. So that's what I'm excited about, looking at our community and how can we improve health and make it equitable for everyone in our community. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming, and thank you, Evan, for inviting me. So I do have my glasses, but then when I can see this, I can't quite see you all. The joys of getting old, right? I'm just grateful my eyes still work. So I'm Abby Palko. I'm the director of the Women's Center at UVA. And different colleges and universities house their women's centers in different areas of the administrative organization. We are on the academic side reporting up to the provost's office. And why that matters is it means we're considered an academic support unit. So everything we do is designed to help the students do better at being students. And so we provide a lot of services and resources that way. And we put as much of it as we can up on our website. And so that's mostly what I'm going to highlight this evening, because it's things that are there and available to you all or to anyone that you know that might need them. The sort of two main pillars of our work involve students doing a year-long internship with us where we are training them to be social change agents. And I'm happy to talk about that more in the Q&A or afterwards. And then our counseling and wellness services. So we have 6 counselors on staff, and we provide free counseling, mostly to students, because again, the funding is for that, although they are able to see a few members of the faculty and staff in the community, and they're able to share resources with people who call as well. And I pulled this up because I wanted to show you some of the resources that we have there. So on the back table with the materials from all of us, on my sort of row of piles, there's a postcard size like this that gives you the URL to find. So Latoria White, who is our case manager, has put together this phenomenal guide to resources at UVA and Charlottesville. So that's where the address is on this one. And it is, if you go in through the website, it's a fully interactive PDF. Click page down, that works better. And then it's got links to websites for all of these different resources. So I'll click in here for a second. You know, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. And it will take you over. And she checks this each summer and updates everything. They're in the middle of doing that right now, so the most up-to-date version will be up very shortly. Other resources that we have up here, our counseling staff puts together on a routine basis tips mostly geared towards students, but I think applicable to almost all of us, if not all of us. And there's a card back there with these as well for the reminder. So it's tips for things like reducing anxiety and stress, having a mentally healthy holiday. That's one of my favorite ones. Summertime wellness. Here's a more student-centered one, safety tips for Foxfield races, things like that. We also have the Helping a Friend Guide is very much targeted for the university age population right now. And this is for the many students who come in to us and say, my friend has experienced sexual assault. I'd like to help her or him, and I don't know what to do for them. And so we have, I must have leaned on it, sorry. We have hard copies of this available in the center, but also the information is here as well. And designed to really help the student in the like 18 to 22 year range who's perhaps encountering this for the first time and they're not sure what to do and how to be helpful. We are working right now on developing an additional guide for family members. I've had a couple of community people reach out to me recently and say, you know, my child has just told me that they've experienced this. I've looked at everything on your website. Tell me now what I need to do. So that is coming shortly. The other thing that we have targeted sort of at the parent demographic is one of our programs, the Body Positive Program, has put together this toolkit for parents. And it's loading. You know, and it's packed full of great advice for how you can help deal with your own issues if you have issues around body, and then help your child, niece, nephew, grandchild, so on. I'm going to be going back and rereading this again very shortly. My daughter's 12. We were just visiting my mom, and she was trying on my prom dresses, and I'm like, oh, I was too skinny. We're going to have a conversation like it's not actually bad when they don't fit her when she's a senior, that's a reflective more of like my journey, not hers. So I'll be looking back at this again for not the first time. And then I also have these back here. These are, I think, one of my favorite things. Coloring cards on the front for a little bit of stress relief. And then on the back, tips for things you can do in a set amount of time to relax. So our next year's batch is still at the printer, so I'm sorry, I only have what's left from last year's batch of the 2 minutes. But as they're updated, we're loading them on here so you can print them out for yourself if you'd like to. There's 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and 30 minutes. So, yeah, we can all make 2 minutes for ourselves. The other fun thing that I want to make sure I show you, our students have been writing a magazine, Iris, for over 30 years, and it's now online, so you can find it here. They are so smart, and they come up with such great ideas. So there is a mailing list if you'd like to get on that over here. But if you're interested in the perspective of what university students are thinking, this is one of my favorite things to put on my calendar when I'm, you know, I've got a big, busy week and there's a block that I'm like, I can write down, read Iris. And it counts as work because I'm checking up on what our students are doing. But really, it's a moment for myself to just sit back and enjoy some fantastic writing. So the student pieces are there. And then pieces written by me and the rest of the staff are on our blog. So a wealth of things there. The staff members at the center who take care of this do a phenomenal job. One of the things that we prioritize amongst ourselves as a staff, and then we hopefully are modeling, we're doing our best to modeling for the students and that they're picking up on and then taking out and rippling out into the world, is the idea of self-care. And we're very clear with them that this is not just you go eat chocolate whenever you want to, because eating chocolate makes you feel good. If it makes you feel good and you enjoy it and it does not negatively impact your health, to go back to Jackie's presentation for a minute, by all means, go enjoy that chocolate. But really, really what we're emphasizing is that self-care is what can be hard work, but the work of looking at your life. I'm going to paraphrase Brianna Wiest, who had a great blog post about this about 2 years ago. It's not running away from your life. It's doing the hard work to make sure your life is a life you don't have to escape, to the best of your ability to do that, keeping in mind the structural issues that Jackie was raising. So encouraging them to take time to exercise, to get fresh air, to eat food that makes their bodies feel good, to do things that connects them with other human beings, that connects them with nature, that gives them enjoyment and pleasure. And we make it a practice at the center to, most of us do this, write our own self-care plans and then follow them. It's a little more comfortable for some staff members than others. I can assure you that when I look at all the staff, I am confident everyone's doing what they need to do to practice self-care, whether or not they're willing to put that label on it. And so I like to take the chance whenever I'm out and about talking to put a plug in for that as well. Because the rest of the world is not this peaceful, calm space that this room is right this moment. And so we need the resources that will help us encounter it and thrive in the middle of it. So I put all of these in the back along with a box of buttons with feminist icons in it. Our students make those. When I sort through the whole box, it makes me feel a little old because I don't recognize everyone. So you're welcome to ask me who they are. I cannot guarantee being able to tell you, but you're welcome to help yourself to them. And in the Q&A or afterwards, I'm also happy to talk about if anyone's interested in what sort of things, if you are at the moment where you are looking for a university for a child in your life, what sort of things you might look for that would provide good support for them. Because there's a lot of stress involved in those years as well. So thank you. Do you want me to put something back up?
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Ajax. I work for the Women's Initiative. And I'm going to read some facts from American Psychiatric Association, and then we'll go ahead and look at the resources that we have available from the Women's Initiative. So there are gender differences in mental disorders. So there are disparities between women and men in regard to risk, prevalence, presentation, course, and treatment of mental disorders. So if we think about rates of mental health conditions, each year in America, 1 in 5 women has a mental health problem, such as depression or post-traumatic stress disorder, just to start, right? And depression is the most common mental health issue in America. And the next is PTSD, and after that comes anxiety. So the most common mental health problem in women is depression. Twice as many women experience depression in their lifetime than men. Approximately 1 in 9 women, 18 or older, have had at least one major depressive disorder in the past year. This is 2017, really. Compared with men, women are twice as likely to experience PTSD, and women are more likely to have hypervigilance, feel depressed, and have trouble feeling emotion, in the sense, like, because they are not able to cope with their emotions, it's a lot of trouble. And anxiety, women are twice as likely as men to experience generalized anxiety disorder or panic disorder. So there you have it, the facts, right? So if we think about barriers in accessing mental health care, before I read out the facts of the research that has been done, I'm wondering if you can think about, if whatever comes to your head when we think about barriers to mental health, what's probably on the top?
Insurance,
yeah.
Money.
So money comes on the top, which is true. Key barriers, economic barriers, lack of insurance, cost, copays, premiums, are no insurance, right? Anything else comes to your mind? Mostly women are, Robin may be able to speak more about that, but women are mostly, those are risk factors, right? So that also could be a barrier to access to care, you're right. And you mentioned even having the knowledge of what is available in my community, what is out there, where is free help available or low-cost help available, that could also be a barrier. Anything else when we think about women in particular?
Kids.
Child care is a huge barrier, right? Women who have younger children who do not go to school, where do I put the child? I don't have money to access mental health care, but where do I find child care when I go to access care? Anything else that comes to mind?
Time off from work,
exactly. So, and stigma, it's still there, right? Stigma in accessing mental health care. So the Women's Initiative, so this is our website. I thought it'd be a good idea to go over our website and what we have available. So when we think about the first barrier to mental health care, it is economic barrier when women feel like, even if they have insurance, they may feel like, oh, I am in a, you know, violent relationship. If I use the insurance, my partner may find out and then I'll be in trouble. So that is also, we consider that as underinsured. And women who are not, who have insurance, but their deductible is like $3,000. And by the time they reach the deductible, they are not going to be able to even, you know, reach the deductible by the end of the year. And also not having insurance at all. So the Women's Initiative provides free to low cost mental health care for women regardless of the ability to pay. So I'm gonna pull up one particular. So this is our current offering page, and everything on this page when it actually comes up is free. So while it's coming up, I just want you to know we have free walk-in clinics every day of the week, Monday to Friday, in three different locations. But the information is available online. We have two therapists per walk-in clinic, so anyone can walk in, any woman can walk in and access mental health care without having to wait for a wait list. Without having to worry about paying, without having to worry about asking for their insurance information, etc. I don't know why it's not opening, but let's see. Let's try this again. I think it is coming up. Great. So we have, we also have several groups available at the Women's Initiative as well, and which all of them are free. Some of them require registration, prior registration, and some of them like yoga, sound bath, and we have knitting groups, we have craniosacral therapy. So all of them are drop-in. Craniosacral therapy needs registration, but most of our groups are drop-in groups, and some of our groups need registration, and all of them are free. So a woman can access three free walk-in sessions in a period of 90 days. So in that three walk-in sessions, we are able to see if They have insurance, and if they're able to access their insurance, we will be able to provide them with resources outside the community, because if they're able to afford their insurance. But if they don't have insurance, if they're underinsured, then one of our therapists will take them on. So regardless, if anyone in your life are in need of mental health care and they are afraid, oh my God, if I call, it's a 3-month wait list out in the community, or, you know, there's a lot of questions about insurance and copay, I'm not sure how to navigate all that, please encourage them to go to the Women's Initiative walk-in clinic, and we'll help them navigate that. And maybe they are eligible for our services. If they are, we will take them on. So with the child care that one of you brought up, we do have childcare available during the walk-in hours. So if they have a child and if they're worried about how am I going to leave this child, so they can call prior to coming in, just let us know, I have a child, do you have childcare available today? Most of the days we do have childcare available, so we try to take that barrier away as well. So when we think about the barrier of stigma, events like this, right, and we all have a role in reducing the stigma and normalizing asking for help, right? So I think that's what we are doing, and I hope that we'll continue doing that, normalizing talking to somebody. I go talk to someone. So I think, it's just like normalizing that asking for help is available. This never came up. So, but anyway, you do know where it is now. It's the summer offerings, and everything in that page is free of charge. And we keep updating that every quarter. So if you want to look at that, that will be available. And I also have the flyer available at the back as well. So one more resource I want to bring up before I sit down is Help Happens Here. So the role of women a lot of times doesn't just end with us. We care about our brothers and fathers and sons, and right? So I think it'll be helpful to know what other resources, maybe like free help or affordable help, is available in the community. Have you heard about Help Happens Here? Yes? Okay. So Help Happens Here is a website that the Coalition, Mental Health Coalition, put together, and it's very helpful to find care for mental health and substance use as well, and also health and wellness, pretty much. So, great. So Help Happens Here, it's right here. So if you look at here, so there is information and referral right here. So if you want to call someone to ask for information regarding whatever service you are looking for, it's there. Or if you want to just browse through that, there's mental health services, addiction and substance use disorders, health, wellness, and children services available as well. So this is a great resource to give someone who is looking to for help and they don't know where to start. So someone may be helping to navigate through that difficult question. So I'll be here and hang out a little bit if you have any other questions. That finally opened, but.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lexi. I'm from SARA. And SARA stands for the Sexual Assault Resource Agency, which basically just means that we are a rape crisis center that serves Charlottesville and the surrounding counties. And when you think of SARA, we break up into 4 different teams. The first of our team is the first of the teams is our direct services team, and that is what most people think about when they think about accessing SARA services. The direct services team makes up our advocates and our therapists, who both work in-house with survivors of sexual violence and their loved ones. Our advocates help people navigate through systems like the court advocacy system, medical care, all of that, and then therapists in-house work with survivors and their loved ones through trauma. The second team is our outreach team, which is a team I'm a part of. And in many ways, we are the face of the agency. So the outreach team means that we are out in the community, getting our name out there, making sure people know about SARA, so that they know where to find us if they ever need our help. The bridge between our direct services team and our outreach team is our crisis services, which includes emergency room advocacy. So if a survivor has been sexually assaulted, they can seek medical care at the UVA emergency room, and Sarah staff is always there with them as an advocate to make sure that they're not alone in that process. We also have a 24/7 hotline, which is available to anyone at any time of day, that is staffed mainly by volunteers. So if you're interested in that, let me know. And then our third team is the prevention team. And the prevention team is really cool because their goal is to work with the community and schools and various other organizations to make it so that Sarah doesn't have to exist in the first place. So their goal is to go out and spread messages about prevention, such as bystander intervention, so that if you see something happening, you know what to do to stop it. Talking about consent, so we know what's okay and what's not okay when we're interacting with others. And our prevention team is actually the largest prevention team in the state, which is pretty amazing. It has 3 people. and they reach over 10,000 people in last year, which is pretty amazing for 3 people to do. And then the last team is our administrative team. And I think that they're the most important because they make sure that we stay funded. So all of Sarah's services are free of charge. We were able to provide advocacy, therapy, all of that completely free to survivors and their loved ones. Yeah. So anybody has any questions, let me know.
All right. I'll bring up the rear.
All right. Thank you, Evan, for hosting this event and for my sister agencies being here. Sarah and she get mixed up a lot, so I'm with the Shelter for Help and Emergency, which is also known as SHE. Robin Jackson, I'm the legal advocate and outreach counselor there. And we are the local domestic violence program who provides comprehensive services to survivors of intimate partner violence. And we also provide services to Louisa Green, Nelson, Fluvanna, Albemarle, and Charlottesville. We've been in the community 40 years. Our services are similar to Sarah in that we have a prevention team, admin, direct services, and our volunteer pool. And so I feel like our title or the name of our agency is very misleading because we do have a shelter, the residential facility, but we also have outreach services. So you don't have to be a resident at the shelter to be receiving outreach services. The residential facility is in a confidential location, and somebody can stay up there for up to 6 weeks. But my office, which is the outreach office, is located across the street from Albemarle High School. So anyone in the community can come there at any time. If in the Q&A you have more questions about our services, I'm happy to answer those because they're pretty comprehensive. I more so wanted to talk about, because tonight's topic of women's empowerment, that specific to the population that my organization serves is to intimate partner violence and people in abusive relationships. And so with that, when you have someone who is being abusive, an abusive partner, that is the definition of disempowerment because they are taking away, they're, you know, maintaining power control over their partner to, like, financially, mentally, emotionally, physically, sexually, all these different ways. And it is our job to empower and offer them a safe place to do that. And that starts with, you know, as soon as they access our services, if they're contacting our hotline, automatically our hotline advocate is appreciative. Thank you for being so brave to contact us. We're doing safety planning. We're doing, you know, resources, advocating for them, validating their feelings, really trying to build this person up who has been torn down by their abusive partner. And there are many ways that being with an abusive partner can destroy sense of self-worth, self-esteem, you know, those messages that are sent that you are worthless without me. we at the shelter really pride ourselves on the programs that we offer are designed to make an impact on empowerment. And so even when somebody's coming in the residential facility, people are at different stages of their empowerment and along the line of where they're at. If they're still in therapy or abusive partner, or maybe they've been out for, you find empowerment in those stories of being able to, hey, she made it that far. What should she do? You know, that means I can do it. And so that in and of itself is empowering. The services we provide are voluntary services, so we're not requiring anybody to do anything. We used to have where you were mandated to go to your support groups, go to a counselor, go to case management when you're at the residential facility. There was all these da-da-da. And so, in essence, we were another controlling entity in somebody's life who was already being controlled. So years ago, we switched over to voluntary services because maybe it's just that they need a safe place to stay that night. So they don't need to access case management, and they just want a night of rest. And so really catering to a trauma-informed approach of understanding that it's not about us. If services are accessible there, they're there for the taking. Certainly we'll meet people halfway, but we don't want to create a codependent relationship. The Women's Initiative has been extraordinary in addressing every single barrier to gaining services. They try to like just bust down. So Women's Initiative has partnered with us, and Joanna comes, a licensed therapist comes for 8 hours every week to the residential facility to offer that service. And that's just extraordinary because somebody can walk downstairs and receive these services, and again is empowering. I think that's all I have to say about empowerment, other than when I'm doing counseling or meeting somebody, a client or somebody accessing services, knowing that the most dangerous time for anyone in an abusive relationship is when they leave. It is of crucialness that I offer empowerment because it can be a life or death situation, because the most dangerous time for anybody in an abusive relationship is when they leave. So if I'm imposing my views of what this person should do, that might lead to an unsafe situation. So being able to safety plan where they're at, they know this person better than anybody, and it may not be the right time for them to leave. So it's extremely valuable that if somebody is choosing to remain in the relationship, we still want to maintain that relationship and make sure, okay, so you're going to stay. What are we going to do to keep you safe? Because what will happen, it'll happen again. And what we know is that it only escalates with time. So we're not going to shut the door on anybody. We want to leave that door open. So that's all I got. But thank you so much for coming tonight.
All right. Well, there were a lot of great resources in there. I'm glad we were able to share that with more of our community.
For sure. This podcast is made possible through generous support from the Friends of the Library. If you'd like to learn more or join the Friends, please head to their website at jmrlfriends.org.
Please hit subscribe wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast. If you have books that you'd like us to read and discuss, or topics that you'd like to hear on a future episode, please email us at podcast@jmrl.org.
That's all for us today. We'll be back next month with another recording from a library event. Thanks for tuning in, and we're glad to be
on the same page.